Entry number one, guinea pig B. A simple analogy for the listener. There are pools and there are lakes. There are benches and there are stadiums. There are scrapbooks, and then there is Buckminster Fuller's Dymaxion Chronophile. Your host reports on a singular case of self-documentation. I'm leaving traces of myself everywhere. Traces in things I make or pick up or items given to me. Traces of myself in thousands of everyday objects. Little notes from myself, reminding me where I've been and what I've done. I notice this most acutely when I'm saving things and when I'm throwing them away. And much is easy to throw away. Ticket stubs, pamphlets, candy wrappers, class essays, binders of notes, even birthday cards, old mix CDs, even some gifts after a few months or years. But some things I can't imagine letting go. Letters from friends and family, certain photographs to ones I've taken or ones given to me. And I'm saving my sixth grade notebooks with my first stories for the day when I'll look back into them and try to figure out who I was. So, how do I know if I'm saving the right things? Every item is a piece of me, after all, and don't I want to save as much of me as I can? There's no better case study for this question than R. Buckminster Fuller. Fuller, or Bucky as he was known to his friends, was a 20th century Renaissance man, creator of the geodesic dome, think Epcot, and an intellectual icon in the 60s and 70s. He was prodigious. He wrote dozens of books, published papers on architecture, science, design, global hunger, housing shortages, politics, and even once gave a 42-hour marathon lecture called Everything I Know.
This is real news about a century. It was highly feasible to take care of all of humanity at a higher standard of living than anybody has ever experienced or dreamt of, to do so without having anybody profit at the expense of another, so everybody can enjoy the whole earth, and can all be done by 1985.
He was also the creator of a mind-bogglingly comprehensive diary. From 1917 to 1983, more than 60 years, he undertook an experiment to document his life. The only way to do this, he decided, was to save everything.
He would put all of his manuscripts in the archive, all sorts of telegrams, letters exchanged between him and his wife, business cards from people that he would meet along his travels, sometimes travel schedules, little bills, napkins that he was...
My name is Xiaoyuan Chu, and I was the assistant curator for the Fuller Archive between 2000 and... 4 and 2006.
Christmas cards, birthday cards, cards from children in schools, random hotel receipts, every piece of correspondence that ever came into him or that he sent out. Newspaper clippings, and keep in mind that this was before we had email, so everything really is in a hard copy.
He called it the Dymaxion.
Dynamic. Maximum tension.
Chronophile. And by the time it was finished, it stretched over 1,300 linear feet. That's roughly one quarter of a mile of filing boxes stretched end to end. It's the largest collection Stanford owns, and one of the biggest personal archives in the United States. I wanted to know more about the Chronophile and its creator, so I found an expert. Xiaoyuan was the assistant curator for the archives for 2 years. She spent countless hours with its contents, and helped dozens of visiting scholars navigate their way through the labyrinth of boxes containing bills, letters, and sketches. She made some interesting finds in the process.
A set of large, life-sized, head-shaped cookies.
And she learned more about the details of Fuller's life than she'd probably ever know about another person. But after 2 years, she still hadn't gotten the whole story, and she realized she probably never would.
I think after a while I became overwhelmed, you know, because I could sit there for, you know, hours and hours and I wouldn't even be able to get through 3-4 boxes of his work. So I realized that I would never be able to get familiar with the whole archive. I don't think anybody ever has.
She comes to Stanford almost every Friday to continue her research in the Fuller Archives. On one of those Fridays, I met her at the library and got the story of the Chronophile. The first story is the foundational story, the creation myth.
The story goes that he was standing on the shores of Lake Michigan.
It's the story of how Fuller, the Renaissance man we know him to be today, came into being.
And he sort of had an epiphany.
It's 1927, and Fuller is on the verge of suicide.
He was sort of visited by a voice.
He wanders out to Lake Michigan and is about to drown himself.
A voice said to him, you know, if you're really that worthless, right? If you're so worthless, then clearly you're not even worth killing. So, you know, why not, you know, just save yourself? And if you're so worthless, why don't you devote yourself to being an experiment, to seeing how much one individual, one, you know, poor little guy can do on behalf of all humanity to make the world a better place.
That is how Buckminster Fuller became Guinea Pig Bucky.
An experimental case of one human being. So with that in mind, the archive for Fuller became almost like a laboratory notebook. It became a way of recording this lifelong experiment of his. And so all of these pieces of paper, all of these manuscripts that he was writing on were sort of like data points of this lifelong journey that he took.
According to Xiaoyun, the chronophile is a weird mix of modesty and hubris. Fuller thinks he's worth nothing, but then again, if he's saving everything, he must think he's worth something. He probably began saving documents around 1917, but the collection was not named the chronophile until a decade or so later. Fuller considered it part experiment, part research archive. When he started the chronophile, I wonder if Fuller imagined that years later, researchers would still be pouring through this collection. If so, he would have been right. The Fuller Collection, which contains extensive audio and video documentation of Fuller's life as well, is one of the most frequently accessed special collections at Stanford. But the chronophile was not just an impressive set of documents. It offered something more for Fuller. Validation.
I would suggest that this was also, the archive was also important maybe as a source of pride, if not a self-aggrandizement. I think that keeping this large and enormous archive became really a source of legitimacy for Fuller.
I'd never thought of this before. When you're saving the smallest traces of yourself, the you that's making the traces has got to be pretty substantial. Otherwise, why bother? Fuller, for all his guinea pig Bucky modesty, did presume that someone would actually want to look through these things once he was gone. Still, Fuller in some ways kept his privacy. Because for all the chronophile contains, it does have one noticeable absence, the absence of Fuller's internal life.
I think the picture of Fuller that emerges is quite complex because it's hard when you're digging through all this ephemeral information to get a clear picture of what he was really thinking. It's not like a personal diary in which you're writing your innermost thoughts. In fact, you might say that as a diary, it's somewhat impersonal, right? It's a whole collection of sort of business letters and notes, and he's never exactly pouring out, you know, my thoughts, my feelings at this particular time are this. But, you know, he was an insanely busy person. I don't exactly know how he kept up his energy to do all the traveling, the collaborating, business meetings, letter writing, advising of students that and lecturing that he actually did. So maybe that's why he didn't even have barely the time to indulge in worrying about what he was feeling.
Even if he wasn't pouring out his heart into a diary, Fuller does show his human self through the letters he writes. The chronophile contains an incredible volume of letters written and received by Fuller. Actually, incredible volume is an understatement. The chronophile contains over 200,000 letters, probably about 10,000 times more letters than everyone I know, myself included, will ever write. The great thing about that kind of volume is the sense you get of who Fuller was when you look at them. A genius, a tireless conductor of business, a bottomless reservoir of ideas, and a human being with flaws and jealousies.
I think in the earlier part of the chronophile, probably when he's exchanging letters with his wife, that's probably the time where you get closest to his own emotional reality. Also, you know, he had arguments with people. There are arguments about attribution. Some people have accused him of sort of stealing their work and sort of bringing it in underneath his own umbrella. And I think to some degree their claims may have some legitimacy to them. So, for example, seeing Fuller write, you know, kind of mean letters to people saying, you know, you have no idea what you're talking about. You know, this is all my work. You get a more nuanced picture of him. He was a human being after all.
So there's a sense of Fuller the romantic in the early sections, and elsewhere you can see him being just as petty and fallible as anyone else. But I had to wonder if those are just glimpses surrounded by thousands and thousands of pages of impersonal junk. I asked Xiao Yun if the chronophile was accurate to who Fuller was. The life contained in a quarter mile of boxes, does that have anything to do with the life that was actually lived?
I think the archive is quite accurate to what Fuller was and how he was, because if you listen to some of his speeches, he is very, very kind of almost overwhelming in terms of the amount of information. He's copious in his lectures. I think he probably would have said that he set himself the bar of comprehensivity, right? So he wanted it to be comprehensive. And in order for it to be comprehensive, he had to stick by that principle. You know, everything is equally important. Everything is equally, has an equally valid place, you know, within this particular archive. And over the course of a lifetime, that will amount to, you know, over 1,300 linear feet of papers.
So in saving himself, Fuller was actually being himself. More than the revelatory power of any one document, the chronophile itself is faithful testament to the man's life. He was an experiment, and he wanted to see what would happen if he took on the unimaginable task of documenting a life as fully and accurately as possible. And that's why it's not something anyone who isn't living his or her life as an experiment should try. Does it make you think differently about all the scraps of ephemera that pass through your life?
It actually made me want to throw more of them out because I think that I sort of looked at it in a different way. How can I really make sure to conserve that which is really, really most important to me and sort of let the ephemera fall to the wayside? One interesting thing about self-documentation is that nowadays, you know, a lot of what you're doing is going to be engraved in your computer. So, for example, we'll have archives come in nowadays which are nothing more than a stack of CDs containing full email correspondences, you know, over a decade or so from different people. I sort of dream about taking all the Fuller archive and, you know, sort of scanning it all and into a series of, you know, 100 DVDs, which would be a whole lot more space efficient to store than what we have now.
It just seems like a nicer testament to someone's life, though, if it's a series of boxes. If you're going to compare what you leave behind, you know, for future generations, a stack of CDs or a third of a mile of boxes.
Yeah, again, like I said, from a research standpoint, it can be a little frustrating. But yeah, I mean, I do think that it does show just how many relationships, how many things he was involved in at any given time, you know, how the world became somewhat smaller, you know, because he touched so many parts of it.
So the days of Fuller-like monumental archives are coming to an end. From now on, even the most prodigious among us will leave behind nothing more than a stack of CDs. Dozens and dozens for the grandest, and one or two for the rest of us. But maybe, at the end of things, we can have both. Without tangible items, I think a life's record is incomplete. I want to save the physical, because I've touched it, and there's no digital substitute for that. If I have my choice, my email, my writings, my pictures, those will all be on CDs, on top of the notebooks, the smudged photographs, and old letters I've saved.